Hey, good morning, good afternoon, everybody in Asia. Thanks for joining the call. I'm sure you've had a chance to at least take a quick look at the statement, but I'll make a couple of comments up front, and then I'll hand to Andy to get into much more detail, and we'll have some time for questions at the end. I think the quarter we can characterize in a few ways. First, the external environment remains very tough, particularly tough in the early part of the quarter, January and into February, improving both externally and also in terms of our progression. But the net result for the quarter is continued weak returns, clearly, and below our medium-term profit targets. That said, we set about to accomplish a number of make progress on a number of the strategic objectives and the operational objectives that we've been commenting on consistently since November, and I think we made good progress on each of those. So we have halted the decline in income, and I think we'll continue to focus on improving our income trends. Our cost efficiency programs broadly are on track. We've continued to manage our overall risk and risk concentrations, and we've continued to strengthen our capital and liquidity positions. So I feel that we're in a very good position to withstand further volatility in markets. In no way do we think that we've rounded the bend, as it were, on the difficult times, but we do think we're very well prepared for them and are focusing entirely on the operational tasks that we set out for ourselves and feel like we made good progress over the course of this quarter. So I'll hand over to Andy now to go through the quarter in detail, and we'll both be here for questions later.
Okay, thanks, Bill. Let me pick up one or two of the key points in the numbers. So let's start with income, given that's clearly been the area of the biggest focus, especially given the declines that we saw sequentially through last year. So headline level income up 3% quarter on quarter. If one takes out the impact of market volatility earlier in the year and the non-repeat of the mark-to-markets on the syndicated loans in Q4, even if you normalize for that, it's sort of slightly down. So relatively stable on income. The external environment clearly does remain challenging, and the management team's top priority is and continues to be on the income trends. This was also the first period where we've been actively hedging our XVA. There was considerable volatility intra-period. However, as a result of our hedging activity, we booked a very small P&L gain for the quarter as a whole, and were able to manage other areas of market risk RWA. So the incremental impact of the XVA hedging was very muted on the CET1. Secondly, on costs, even though regulatory expenses continued at similar levels to last year, we reduced our underlying operating expenses by 12% year on year, or about 8% if one excludes FX. We remain on track to deliver the $1 billion of gross cost efficiencies in 2016, which will create the opportunity to invest in the capacity that we referred to back in November, particularly in the retail space and on wealth management. Those investments projects, coupled with wage inflation and the UK bank levy in the fourth quarter, will mean an increase in the quarterly cost run rate for the remainder of the year in both regulatory and other operating expenses. So overall, we're sort of comfortable with the consensus estimate at just over $10 billion of costs, including the UK bank levy for the year in total. Thirdly, on loan impairments, this is very much in line with prior first quarter experience. We have seen continued improvement in retail client loan impairments, benefiting from earlier de-risking actions and business divestments. Corporate, institutional and commercial client loan impairment was lower quarter on quarter and in line with prior first quarter experiences. But as the world remains uncertain, we will continue to take decisive action where we see risks developing. Fourthly, making good progress on the balance sheet restructuring. We remain committed to addressing the $20 billion of RWAs in the liquidation portfolio. We've taken an additional $100 million or so of loan impairment, reflecting our current assessment of realizable value as we progress on the sale processes. As you might imagine, these are not straightforward negotiations, and as a result, this process will take some time. We'll continue to update you on our progress at each set of results over the coming 12 to 18 months, But in total, we've now utilized 1.9 billion of the estimated 3 billion restructuring charges. We're also making progress on optimizing the returns on the $50 billion of low-returning risk-weighted assets. We have identified the clients, and we now have individual client plans in place. Feedback from early individual client conversations suggests a substantial proportion of the relationships can be retained at enhanced returns, although this is clearly still only at an early stage, and we'll provide more of an update on that at the half year. In Korea, following substantial restructuring and repositioning of the business, we had a broadly break-even profit quarter, which is good. There's still a lot of work to do, but this is a step in the right direction, and we will continue to drive business performance, leveraging our strategic alliances and growing the network business. In Indonesia, negotiations are ongoing to explore options to reduce presence to a single entity, and we'll update as and when there is any more progress to read out on there. Fifth, we have continued to strengthen our foundations. The group CET1 ratio improved by 50 basis points to 13.1%, benefiting from RWA reduction, Q1 profits, and currency translation. Total capital ratios increased to 19.6%. The advances deposits ratio, 70.5%, and leverage ratio at 5.5%. Total of our commodity producer and trader exposures down 8% since the end of the year to just under $37 billion. The group has also been very active in the capital markets, successfully issuing over $2 billion of term senior debt in five and 10-year tenors and completing a liability management exercise, repurchasing $2 billion of legacy securities. Finally, we are building momentum in a number of our businesses, which is sometimes masked by the headline numbers, but just to pick a few highlights, in trade, independent surveys show that we are recognized by our clients as being the leading transaction banking provider across our markets. We've also seen strong growth in the number of multi-market cash mandates won, something we have been very actively targeting. In private banking, we've added $500 million in net new money. In Hong Kong, which remains our most profitable market, we have just launched an exclusive alliance with Asia Miles, building on the strong momentum we have in retail banking, which has been very well received. Finally, we have again been recognized for our offshore Moomba capability, ranked second for products and services by Asia Money for the second consecutive year, as well as being voted the best renminbi bank in Hong Kong for 3 years in a row. Overall, trading conditions do remain tough and did remain tough in Q1. Against that backdrop, we are executing on our strategy. We are rebuilding performance on a strengthened foundation. We've maintained a strong capital position with an improved CET1 ratio, and we remain liquid and open for good returning business with our clients. With that, I suggest I hand back to the operator, Kelly, and then we, Bill and I, will be very happy to take your questions.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone and wait for your name to be taken by an operator. If you wish to cancel that request, please press the hash key. Your first question comes from the line of Rohith Chandra-Rajan of Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just a couple from me, please, on risk-weighted assets. The first really was if you could provide a little bit more detail on the $8 billion reduction in the quarter, just what the drivers of that were. I guess the $8 billion compares to a $0.5 billion reduction in the gross loans in the liquidation portfolio. I'm interested to know what the differences are there. Secondly, Andy, in your comments, you mentioned the $50 billion of RWAs in the low-returning relationships. Just wondered if you can provide a little bit of an update in terms of how that process is going and what your current expectations are. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, they're sort of a little bit interrelated. As I said, on the individual accounts, we have got now individual account plans with the individual sort of account managers now having targets on the overall reduction program. We have started discussions with a number of those, and they're obviously at different stages in discussion. Some of them are ones where there are nearer-term sort of fixes as and when clients are wanting to do other things. We have seen a positive response from many of those to sort of pointing more business in our direction. But obviously, equally, it will take a period of time to sort of walk through that. So that's sort of where we're at on that. It's something which will take time, and we'll give you updates as we go through over periods of time. The movement on the RWAs, I mean, as ever, there are quite a number of moving parts in there. No particular one sort of stand out in a significant way. We have been actively managing the RWAs to make sure that, particularly sort of in more stress situations, that the RWA we're carrying, is ones that withstands as well. We have taken down some of the RWAs in the sort of lending side of the business where the returns have been a little bit lower. There's a little bit of upward on the XVA hedging that's put in there, not a big number, but some there. Through the operational sort of risks of mechanical reduction that comes through. So bits and pieces, you know, a few billions here, a few billions there, but overall the reduction, as you say, is the order of 7 billion.
Sorry, can I just come back on that? Can you quantify how much of that Q-on-Q reduction is from your deleveraging or restructuring plans?
I would say a small part of it is, maybe something a quarter of it or something like that is coming from that, and the rest is coming from a variety of other sources.
Okay, thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Ronit Ghose of Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Great, thanks. Just a couple of questions to follow up. First question is on asset quality. Your coverage ratio in the quarter is relatively stable versus the year end. And I just wondered if this was simply the short Q1 playing out, which you referred to, particularly in wholesale banking, or is there any sign in the portfolio or outside externally of a stabilization in more generic asset quality? So I'm just wondering, is this a calendar effect, or is there something macro or micro going on in the portfolio? The second question is the leverage exposure number. The loan number is down in the quarter, and the RWA number is down in the quarter, and the leverage exposure number is up in the quarter. And I just wondered if there's some seasonality going on there. Thank you.
Let me take those in order. I mean, there's nothing particular to call out on asset quality, I wouldn't say. Clearly, in terms of provisioning, when we do the full year, there is a little bit more sort of hindsight period to reflect upon before sort of finalising, whereas obviously as an IMS we're reporting earlier, so there's slightly less time. But I don't think that sort of, you know, significantly impacts in terms of total provisioning levels and total provision levels as a proportion of the gross book. So the fact that the cover ratios are to within a percentage point sort of where they were at the end of the year, I think you should just, you know, take as being it's broadly sort of similar. And obviously in a loan book of 260 billion or so, that doesn't move around sort of dramatically, especially when we have isolated number of items that are in the liquidation portfolio and therefore sort of being dealt with separately. Secondly, on what was your second question was on what? On the leverage ratio?
Yeah, the leverage exposure number, the total leverage exposure number at endpoint was 745,
right,
up 2%, up $15 or $16 billion, whereas the other volume numbers, loans and RWAs, are down. And I'm guessing there's some seasonality or some sort going on in there. I just wondered if you could elaborate on that, please.
I think there may be a small amount of seasonality. To be honest, it's not something that has moved that significant. We'll have a look at that, but I don't think there's any particular movement there.
There's nothing there, right? Can I just come back to the asset quality and just tie that into the restructuring charge you've taken, the $1-3 million in the quarter, which is largely for credit and asset, right? There's a kind of $1.1 billion to go, I guess. And if I'm thinking about the timing, will that really, really coincide with the major asset sales that are in the pipeline that have been publicly discussed in India and in the rest of Asia?
Well, I think you've got two related issues. One is sort of how fast we can actually close deals, and the other is at what point, you know, we have enough visibility directionally on the end pricing. And obviously, we have tried to put our best estimate of realizable values in here as early as we can do, even if the actual exits are not sort of complete. So the fact that there's 100 of extra top-up in there is more that on some of those exposures at the end of the year, we did not necessarily have enough visibility as to likely realizable values, whereas with the passage of time and a bit more discussion, negotiation, in some case auctions, we have now got more visibility, and therefore we have topped it up. 1.9 of the three, as you say, is now being used. And our best view at the moment is over the balance of the year, that three number sort of still feels to us to be in the right ballpark.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jason Napier of UBS. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Three brief questions, possibly. The first, coming back on credit quality, a much, much better outcome than certainly we had in our numbers. I just wanted to check, looking at the sort of NPL formation in the ongoing business, NPLs at sort of 2.2% from 2 a quarter ago. I just wonder whether there was anything kind of lumpy to flag in that, or that is sort of the trend that we should be expecting in the going forward bank as things stand. Shall I go with the other two, or...?
Let me pick that off as Jason, as you pause. I think there are one or two accounts that have gone into that, which is why the NPLs have arisen. There's nothing abnormal in it, but clearly we're still at a phase where there is quite a lot of volatility out there and commodity prices have been moving around quite a lot. So I don't think there's anything abnormal, but I think one should also just recollect and remember that we are still in slightly sort of turbulent territories out there, and hence, to my mind, it's not a surprise that we see that increasing still to some extent, but the commodity element of it is pretty strong thematically.
I mean, 70 basis points of run rate losses for the ongoing bank, given the fears we were harbouring in kind of February, March time, I think most people would have taken that as an outcome. The second question, we've historically, had some seasonality in 2Q versus 1Q revenues around financial markets. But, given the trends that we've seen and the declines that you've booked over the last 12 months, it's hard to know whether we should expect that again. I mean, would we characterize Q1 as seasonally strong, do you think, relative to sort of just the shape of the calendar and the business going forward?
It's such a difficult one, isn't it? The sort of question as to whether the FM side is driven by seasonality or whether it's driven by volatility, I think evidentially the FM had a good income quarter in the first quarter. It was a quarter where early on there was quite a lot of volatility, and we did do well in that period. But I think it very much depends upon one's view as to just how volatile the markets are going to be going forwards.
Thank you. And then finally, my sense is that the salary negotiations and reviews are effective, is it April time? I just wondered, I think you said at full year results that you weren't expecting significant headcount change in hitting the billion of efficiency opportunity for this year. So could you give us a sort of a broad number of where salary inflation has come out for the firm for the April review?
April is sort of the point of the year when salary reviews take place. I'd say that we've got two effects going on here. One is there is definitely a reduction in headcount, particularly the more senior levels, with the people who left the business in the back end of last year, very start of this year. And that is part of the reason why the operating expenses have dropped in the first quarter compared with the fourth quarter and compared with the first quarter a year ago. We've historically had around sort of 4% or so as the sort of rate of salary inflation, which obviously is a weighted average across many markets. Hopefully, it might be a little bit lower than that this time around, but it's in that sort of space.
Thanks very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Manus Costello of Autonomous. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the question. I wanted to come back to the income point, please. I wanted to ask about some of your more annuity-type businesses within the income stream, things like corporate finance, where there is a continued decline in what we're seeing in terms of quarterly revenue progression there. But if I look at your capital build, it's obviously quite strong now. And I wondered to what extent are you thinking about, as you build capital, redeploying that into some areas like corporate finance, or are you seeing a more difficult revenue outlook more generally, so we're more likely to see, in fact, capital build until it gets distributed? How are you thinking about that trade-off, given where we are from a macro perspective? And then just a slightly lower quality question. Several other banks have suggested that Q2 trading has got off to a better start than Q1 did. I wondered if you wanted to comment on how you're seeing trends at the moment for the quarter.
Yeah, Manus. I mean, the corporate finance side of the business obviously is a little bit more lumpy than other parts of our business. We have seen a reasonable pipeline of transactions, but equally, it's pretty competitive. There are some refinancings that, you know, are going on, and hence some of those sort of being delayed. So it does move around from quarter to quarter. I mean, I think the biggest focus is really on returns, which we talked about extensively in November, and really wanting to make sure that we are getting the returns up. It's going to take a period of time, but across the business. And hence being much more sort of thoughtful about capital being allocated to those parts of the business where either the absolute return or the opportunity to improve that part of the business is the greatest. Also being more mindful, as I'm sure most banks are, of the capital that is tied up in those sorts of assets that are most affected by stress tests, to make sure that one doesn't have, you know, excessive downdrafts from stress tests and so on. So it's something that is being dealt with sort of, you know, a case by case across the business, rather than something that is specific to a particular product line. Q2, I'd just say, I mean, we're 1 month in, we're not sort of forward forecasting. There's no particular sort of comment that I'd draw out on that.
Mez, if I could just add on the on your first question. It's clear that the external environment, it remains tough. Our clients aren't investing at anything like the pace that they have in the past. They've not begun their process of investment recovery, and that's going to impact our corporate finance deal flow as well as our broader capital markets deal flow. For the more annuity businesses, that's all bad news, right? For the more annuity businesses, the good news is that our market share, as far as we can tell it, is flat to up in pretty much everything that we're doing. I guess the good overriding news is that the strong capital position that we're maintaining and in fact bolstering is intended to allow us to capture the market shares with our clients as our clients recover in terms of their underlying business. And I don't know whether we're ahead or behind our local or international competitors, but it certainly feels like we're in the right place right now to enjoy the growth opportunities when they come. We're not counting on it in the short term, but we're absolutely ready for it when it comes.
But it's not coming at the moment. So this trend that we've been seeing of softer income but better capital build is something which, for the time being, you think is likely to persist?
Well, the economic environment, look, we can all judge, right? The economic environment remains tough. And with a period of stability, we'd expect our clients to start investing again and for global trade to pick up again. But is the economic environment going to stay as relatively benign as it has been for the past month, or is it going to look more like January, February? We don't know.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Chris Manners of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. So two questions, if I may. The first one was on your 8% ROE target for 2018. As I recall, one of the big blocks that was helping you to recover the ROE was the revenue growth. And I guess, you know, with the print you have in Q1 and maybe you're sort of tempering our enthusiasm a little bit for a pickup in the rest of the year, that looks like it's going to be hard to deliver. Obviously, you know, good result on the cost base in Q1, but you're, again, sort of guiding it up a little bit from that rate. So how should we think about, you know, if we were to recast that ROE walk to get to the 8%, which part should we rely on? Should we really be relying on that revenue growth coming through in sort of 17, 18, or could you actually, you know, again, surprise us on the cost base? And the second question was on the capital. Obviously, you know, good print as you know, everyone's been highlighting. I know that you said in the annual report you were hoping to return to a dividend for this year. Is that still on the cards, or are you actually going to try and prioritise some of the growth opportunities to make sure that you can continue to improve share in some of your markets? Thank you.
Yeah, let's start with the 8% question. We are going to have to pull on many levers to get to the 8% number, and that is exactly what we are doing. The exact mix of which levers pulled to what degree, I think, is going to evolve over a period of time. Clearly, the rate of income decline last year was the most important thing to address. And it's good to see that we have made some progress on that, albeit it's one quarter, and one can't draw trends totally off one quarter time period. But I think, you know, suffice it to say, the management team are doing everything that they possibly can do to try to actually make sure that, you know, we get to that as fast as we possibly can do. And that's income, it's cost, it's risk management, it's loan impairments, it's new affiliations with other parties, it's, you know, it's capital management, etc. So we're doing everything that I think we can do, and we will sort of endeavour to get there as fast as we can. On the capital front, look, we've always said that we want a secure capital base. It's encouraging that, you know, we are operating at the level we're at now. We've said that the dividend is something that we'll relook at later in the year, and I think at that point, when we've got a few more months under our belt, that is what we will then do.
Got you. So is it fair to say if you can be ahead of your capital target of 12 to 13% that you should restart the dividend, or it's too early to call that?
No, it's too early to call. That's neither a yes nor a no to that answer. It's just that I think we need to see a few more months. We need to see a bit more earnings trajectory, and the board will no doubt then at that point feel more comfortable about whatever decision it decides to take.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Martin Leitgeb, Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. A few questions and follow-ups on my end, please. First, a clarification on capital. I think back at the full year results 2 months ago, you flagged that the impact of the disposal of the liquidation portfolio would drive up your Core Tier 1 ratio by roughly 40 basis points towards a 13%. I was just wondering if you could comment if anything has changed on that assessment, so all else equal, if you dispose the portfolio from today's perspective, whether we should be thinking of the Core Tier 1 ratio going towards a 13.5 from here, or whether anything on your assessment on the liquidation portfolio has changed in the meantime. The second question is a quick clarification on the commodity book, and you state the total commodity book as of 1Q16. I was just wondering if you could give us a sense where the trade book has moved there. I think that was 20.3 billion as of fourth quarter, just in light of obviously the sharp rebound we had in some of the underlying commodity prices. I was just wondering if the mix between trade and producers has shifted more towards trade in this quarter. And finally, on the upcoming stress test later in the year, I was just wondering if you could give us any sense on how you see this year's stress test scenario compared to last year's one, obviously in particular in light of the substantial changes in the group's footprint and capital position since. Thank you.
Right, Martin, let's take those in order. So first one, liquidation portfolio and the impact once that is realised on overall capital. I think the simple answer there is our view as of end of January and our view today remain broadly unchanged. There is clearly upside in there once we actually exit those arrangements, which would be additive to our otherwise CET1 ratio. On the commodity side, we are slightly lower on total exposure, but we are split still pretty similarly on both sides, so it's not hugely different to where we were at the end of December. And on the stress test, look, we're going through that early stages at the moment, and obviously every year we do those with different sets of factors and different things that are being looked at, and we've got a lot of modelling that we'll be doing ahead of us, but it certainly feels better going into a stress test, you know, having done the rights issue, having done the build on the core CET1, which clearly is a pretty significantly different position to the one we were at a year or so ago.
Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Tom Rayner of Exane. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Can I just go back to Chris's question on the ROE walk, please? Because obviously I don't think the walk's going to end once you've got to 8. You're obviously going to be trying to move on beyond there and get up to sort of 10% returns plus. And just on the levers, Andy, that you sort of alluded to, you didn't give a lot of detail, because the cost guidance this year, again, sort of confirming that you're going to be above that $10 billion annual sort of cost figure. And I think in the past you've said that for Standard Chartered to run with an annual cost base of less than $10 billion would be quite difficult to imagine. So I just wonder, is that a really hard floor? And if it is, then you look at the impairments. I mean, I would assume a normalized sort of impairment charge of 60, 65 basis points. But if that's right, that revenue line at some point in the next few years has to get back up to $17, $18 billion. Otherwise, that double-digit return is going to be very hard to deliver. And looking at where you are today on revenue, that is a huge gap to close. And I just wonder if you could firstly say if any of those assumptions about the $10 billion cost or the 60, 65 basis points is something that you disagree with. And if not, how do you think you're going to close that revenue gap in the next few years? Thanks.
Yeah, Tom, clearly we are starting a long way away from either 8 or 10%. And to the first part of your question, you are absolutely right. Getting to 8 is sort of the start point, but you know, to get to 10, you can't do that unless you've gone through 8 in the process. We are going to have to work on many fronts. I mean, on the cost side, you know, let's just sort of address one point on there. If we were just running the business to maximise the ROE near term, then we, you know, we could maybe not do some of the investments in the business. But our view is actually, for the long term, the business does need investments making selectively, particularly in the retail and the wealth management space. And, you know, we're taking what we believe is long-term view, the longer-term view that says that we will dig hard on cost saves, but we will do some reinvestment there. What we said in November, what we said in January, is that we would aim by 2018 to have the overall cost lower than where we started. So I'm hoping I didn't say that I couldn't see a way of getting them below $10 billion. I think we have implied that, you know, we would be at or slightly lower than that level in the 2018 year, but there is investment we're putting in the meantime. Loan impairments, obviously, it depends upon one's view of where the sort of normal, if there is such a thing, level of loan impairments does fit. And evidentially, the last several quarters, we have been well above levels that are the average of prior periods. And hence, with what we've been doing on the risk management, there is a lot of focus that's gone in on that space, because it is a very high proportion of our income that has been going in loan impairments recently. And that is clearly going to be another key to moving it forward. Income, then, clearly, we all know, is going to play a role in this. We have not specifically put numbers on that. And I think you will appreciate that after a period of declining income, job number one is to erode and stop the rate of the erosion of the decline, and at least get stable, and then, you know, we can start to look about what we can do going forwards. So, you know, 8% 2018, you know, it's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get there as fast as we can do, but we are dependent to some extent upon the macro environment. The tougher that is, the longer it is, obviously, the more difficult that is to achieve. But hopefully that is a question of time period. The endeavour to get to 8 and then later higher remains absolutely central to what the management team are trying to do.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Stephen Andrews of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning, everybody. I'm sorry to come back to the topic of revenue again, given how desperate you seem not to give any guidance at all on it, but I kind of agree with everyone else. Without the revenues, then the 8% is sort of unachievable. Can I come at it another way? Can you, on the consumer book, which is again down a couple of percent quarter on quarter from a revenue perspective, I add the retail and the wealth management together. Is there still a drag underlying there from the roll-off books? And if so, how big is that? And how much longer do you think that drag will be significant? And secondly, just on the wholesale banking business, can you just characterize your appetite for putting on risk? I know you can't talk about revenue trends specifically, but is it a question of you actually want to put more capital to work now, but you just can't find the attractive opportunities in your footprint at the moment, or you are genuinely just still in de-risking mode, so you don't want to put more capital to risk? Thank you.
Yeah, so the way I look at it is this. I mean, if you do the consumer corporate split, as you asked the question, the wealth management has reduced a little bit in the quarter, but we all know that the external environment in that space was pretty tricky, particularly at the very start of the quarter. We hope that that is a sort of transitory thing, and that over a period of time, as investors get the confidence back and they see stock markets rising, that we should see that one coming back. So I don't think we should judge wholly on the basis of one quarter. I know you weren't doing, but I don't think we should do that. And on the retail side, again, it's fractionally down, but there's a number of initiatives that we have got on there. We've got much more focus on the retail side generally than we've had before. We've got a central team that are doing much more best practice sharing, coordinating, setting up alliances with various parties, the Asia Miles Initiative, Santage in Korea, Samsung deal in Korea. So there's a lot of things underway. We are much more focused upon the branches, the branch profitability, and where we need to make changes there, and we'll make those changes. So I think that is very much one of the platform is fine, but we really need to now fine-tune and get more operational performance out of it, and that's what we're setting out to do. On the corporate side, again, it's sort of not an easy question to answer just totally generically. There is business out there. Our market shares are relatively small in quite a number of the places that we do operate, but equally, we're not going to go and sign up for business where we just don't see the returns as being acceptable. And we'd rather, if that is the case, to not do that sort of business and look elsewhere. We've got good relationships with clients. We have got sometimes a share of wallet that we think could be a little bit higher, and that we will focus upon primarily because it's a known client, it's a known sort of set of risk factors. And as we said on the optimization of the overall RWA pool, that's very relationship-based. It will take a period of time. But these are generally very long-standing relationships and are ones that we're working with clients on as we move forward. So I think, simple summary, I'm probably being as evasive as I was before about giving you the forward-looking projection on income, but we are doing a lot of things on many fronts. I think probably last year we did become a little bit risk-averse, and that's sort of the message going through the organization. We are sort of moderating, not in the sense that risk management isn't very important, but just to say, we have the balance sheet, we've got the capability to lend more, and we are perfectly prepared to do that.
I just add some emphasis on that point. We're not de-risking. I think we indicated clearly at the year end that we thought the aggregate portfolio was in a reasonably good shape. We've got plenty of active portfolio management to do within the different buckets of our balance sheet, but we're not in de-risking mode. We're fully engaged with clients, and our clients' activity is suppressed. And will be during this economic time.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Joseph Dickerson of Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. I just have a quick question following up on the comment in the IMS that the loan impairment from corporate, institutional, and commercial was in line with prior first quarter experiences. Can you just clarify whether or not this is, say, business seasonality or if it's simply accounting convention? That would be my first question. And then just lastly, could you comment on what your strategy is going to be in India as you, because I know obviously part of the liquidation portfolio you mentioned has some Indian business in it. If you could give us any color on what your business strategy or approach is going to be in India, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, okay, Joseph. I mean, loan impairment one, I would look at this way. Every quarter we go through, we decide on levels of impairment. We base it on the best set of facts we've got available at the time. It is evidentially the case that when we do a half year or a full year set of results, we typically have about 7 weeks of experience to reflect upon, whereas when we do an IMS, we have 3 weeks. And hence there is typically more information available at the half year and at the full year, and hence why you'll tend to see a pattern whereby we're slightly lower in the first and third quarters and slightly higher in the second and fourth quarters. And the point we were making was that this hasn't been any different to that sort of trend. For those who are worried it might get worse, it has not got worse. And actually in the retail side, if anything, we have actually seen some improvement there. On India, I mean, the strategy there is it is a very, very big market. It is a market which is sort of quite unpredictable. There is a lot of infrastructure spend and so on going on in the country. Equally to your question, there are bumps in the road from time to time. We have taken more impairment charges probably three quarters ago, but are now sort of trued up and are at levels of cover that are pretty comparable with the rest of the business. We've got a new CEO who is in the business now in role. You know, I think as an international bank, we have got a good position there, and we will be thoughtful as we take the business forwards, but there's still a lot of potential in that market.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Sandy Chen from Santos. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I've just wanted to have a question on costs. Andy, I was interested in your comment that headcount reductions have really been coming from the top down. And also, Bill, your comment just about recasting client relationships. My question is really, who has been recasting these client relationships? In other words, has it been lower cost relationship managers kind of without the higher cost overheads of multiple MDs? And if you're reinvesting a lot of those savings in, say, digital mobile channels in retail and or indeed the corporate side, is there potentially capacity to surprise with a lower operating expense base moving forward?
I think that the major change that's really sort of happened on the headcount side has really been consequential on the new organizational structure that Bill put in place shortly after arriving, which I think is much simplified. Essentially, we really are running the big corporates globally, and we are running most of the rest locally. And through that, we have just simplified the business, and we have looked at areas of sort of overlap and duplication, and we have, as a consequence of that, had some people who have left the business. What we clearly are trying to do is to make sure that, to the greatest extent possible, those who are fee-earning and very, very directly client-facing are not the ones who have been affected, and hence it's been sort of more through the support and other infrastructures that those savings have been achieved. But I think the overall simplification of the organization model actually is enabling much the same level of activity to be delivered just off slightly fewer people. Headcount is a big part of our cost base. It's sort of two-thirds of the overall cost of the business, so clearly to make inroads into the cost base, we have to make progress on that front. And I think the steps we took at the back end of last year are now starting to flow through, and you know, we're seeing the real benefits of those.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Chiara Barru from Sanford Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Hi, Andy. I have two quick questions. One is on the principal finance portfolio. If you just inform us, how big is it right now, what's in there, and what's the strategy going forward? Because that's been very volatile the whole of last year. That is one. And the second is, you've come with a senior placing. Are you going to come with an AT1 as well this year as per earlier plan? And how much do you have in mind? Those are the two. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, principal finance, we have taken some sort of costs on both in this quarter and in the previous quarter. Order of magnitude, it's a sort of just below $2.5 billion book now. It is something where one makes a number of investments, and from time to time, you know, some of those businesses are more challenged. And obviously, when that happens, we are appropriately accounting for those. So it's something we're watching quite carefully. I think it's a little bit of a phase in the cycle at the moment, but it is something that we are watching quite carefully. AT1, we have got more AT1 issuance that we need to do over the next 2 or 3 years. There isn't a need to do it early, but when the pricing is right, we will be quite happy to get on and do it. So I think the pricing really is the thing that when that moves forwards, we may well look to go out in the market again, but it's something we don't need to rush to do.
And just on the first one, Andy, as a follow-up, the principal finance portfolio, are you looking at new originations in that space, or is it a closed book right now?
No, we're not close to business. We're looking at things, but we are obviously just more thoughtful and scrutinising more and making doubly sure that what we do, we are very comfortable with.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks.
One more question I think probably we have time for.
Your next question comes from the line of Fahed Kunwar from Redburn. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning. Just a couple of questions. The first one is actually on revenue again. I was just wondering, what were your actual margins quarter on quarter? And is that the real binding constraint for growth? It doesn't seem like you have a capital constraint, but would you have to go too far up the risk curve to get your margins to be stable while casing growth? And the second question is on the interaction between revenues and growth. I think I understand the kind of cost might come down from 10 billion or be around flat, but if you do get the kind of revenue growth that you're hoping for, let's say it kind of does move up in excess of 15 billion, if you look at your 10-year average jaws, it's been about 3% when you even had revenue growth. So is it really feasible that if you got the revenue growth, the cost wouldn't need to go up as, you know, Asian wage inflation increases? So, you know, what are your realistic jaws over a 2-3 year period? And therefore, you know, that really does inform where your ROTE can get to. Thanks.
Yeah, I think on margins, if one looks at that by product, I'd say generally the theme here is margins actually have been reasonably stable. We've got sort of trade margins probably stable, cash very slightly up at the moment. What clearly has an impact, particularly in the trade space, though, is the value of what one is financing, and hence when commodity prices are a little bit weaker, obviously there's just less sheer value going through there, even if the volume is the same. So there's almost three components, the unit price, volume, and the margin itself. But I'd say overall that margins actually have been okay. And I wouldn't say that it's a sort of margin-constrained business. We are very much looking at individual decisions based upon, you know, the risk-stroke return. And as we drive to get the returns in the business up over periods of time, as you say, we have the balance sheet. But I think this is now just about getting the confidence back in the sales teams and really getting people back on the road, which is starting to happen. Revenue growth, I don't know, it's sort of, jaws is an interesting sort of mathematical concept. I suppose where I've been more focused is how can we take absolute cost out of the business, which is job number one, which is what we have been doing. And then to the greatest extent possible, as we get more revenue opportunities, how can we keep the handle on the cost side of it? We have got inherent inflation, as you say in your question, which we know we always need to work through. But there is a lot we're doing on automation in the business. We are spending more on IT now than we have done for some period of time. We are putting a lot more automation into the retail part of the business, and that is where we are spending a lot of money. So I think we are just going to work the productivity side as much as we possibly can do, and certainly the thesis for now is going to be to keep the cost down and get the income growth up as much as we can do off that revised cost base. So I think with that, we probably are just about there. So thank you for joining up on the call. I mean, in summary, I think it is encouraging that we have got some more stability on the income side. However, it is one quarter, and there is clearly a lot more work to do to start to pull forwards against the macro backdrop that is still quite a tough one. But the position of the business, I think, is now set. The management team is now in place. We work from a good capital base. We work from a good liquidity base. And I think this is now just getting on and focusing on execution over the coming quarters. And we'll provide the next update on the half-year results in early August. Thank you very much.